Donna, I get to have as many news fixes as I want. It's my podcast too, you know. Also, they're quickies, so leave me alone. Well, now you know. Now you know. I guess
you do, you, Rizdahl.
Surprise is gone. I'm doing me. Hey, everybody. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. It is Monday today. I got a couple of news fixes. I'm not going to lie.
So many. I'm Molly Wood. We have no time. Thanks for joining us. We are going to go. we're going to make today make sense, and we're going to do it quickly. I like that, by the way. For the first time ever in the rundown, it says, we're here to make you smart and smiley, all within 15 minutes.
Oh, there you go.
That's a not subtle reminder.
Producers are finally catching on. Oh, well, look, we went a little long on Friday, but we're allowed to go long on Fridays because A, there's a beer or two involved, and B, why not?
We made the rules.
Also, oh, wait. I think we need to update listeners on the whole tequila and then exercising thing. You actually did. You went and exercised after a little bit of tequila.
I totally, you guys.
Wow.
I went full nap and rally. Not boot and rally. Nap and rally. I took a little 15-minute disco nap, and I hit the bike. It was freaking great.
Good
I did a 45-minute workout.
Awesome.
I was
That's
wonderful.
Awesome.
I love my bike.
Yeah.
I know.
No, good for you.
I was quite proud of myself. It can happen. Not with a beer, though. I would have been sound asleep for like the rest of the night.
Yeah.
Beer's different.
Forget about it.
Yeah.
All right. Let us, as they say across the pond, let us bang on, shall we? We got things to do.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Just start the links, man. You got to like a nice long list.
You know why that came up?
And I love it.
You know why the England thing came up? I was just reading a story in the New York Times about how Queen Elizabeth is now pulling back at the age of 95. And she's diminishing in her public role. Yeah. You know. Anyway, whatever. So let me tick through my quickies here so that I can get Donna off my back, and then we can go on. Number one, we have talked about India and what a horrible, horrible situation it is there and in many other parts of the country. And we have also talked about how the United States has been engaging in a little bit of vaccine nationalism by not sharing and exporting the vaccines that it has. And word today from the White House that as soon as it's approved here by safety regulators, we're going to take those 60 million doses of AstraZeneca that we have, which are never going to be used here for a lot of reasons, most of which are psychological, and share them with the world, which is really good news. And I think that's just a positive step, especially as bad as it is in many other countries. Number two, census results. They are out. California is going to lose a congressional seat. Texas is going to gain two, blah, blah, blah. The reason I mentioned it here, and I mentioned it on Marketplace, and you all know I try not to double on content, but this is a biggie. Here's the deal. The population of this country is growing in the past 10 years at the slowest rate it has in 90 years since the Great Depression. And that's bad because population is a labor market story. We need people to do the work and to take care of our older citizens and all of those things. And that's a big deal. And we all need to be aware of what's happening with lower immigration, right, which is a policy decision, but also lower birth rates, which is a domestic policy decision.
I totally want to do a whole episode on this.
Yeah.
I want to do a
whole actually should.
Episode
actually,
that's
on a this. That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
It's a really good idea.
I have been pitching this in our Slack for a couple of weeks, but yeah.
Oh,
I mean, birth rate as an economic, just it goes along with our conversation about, I know, totally. I'm not trying to like bust you on the Slack situation, but
no.
You can scroll back.
No.
I mean, birth rate as an economic indicator, like it goes with our growth as a metric kind of conversation. It's just, I think there's a lot tied up in it. That's really, really interesting. It'd be a great show.
Totally.
Producing on the fly.
That's right. And, you know, producers are sitting there taking notes. I'm sure Donna and Marissa are like, oh, God, another one from them. And finally, this piece in the New York Times today about Zuckerberg and Tim Cook kind of not being real happy with each other and that coming to a head this week with Apple's new privacy and ad tracking thing in which they basically say, hey, Facebook, really interesting read. And I think you should. That's what I got.
It is a really interesting read. I'm going to, that was a dog shaking his little collar.
That's all right.
It is a really interesting read and a look inside kind of Tim Cook in particular. Mm-hmm. And I think how like fed up he got with, you know, I mean, Apple is being called on the carpet for lots of behaviors and some of that is well earned and some of it is the moment that we're in and they have a lot of power right in the marketplace unquestionably, but it has been interesting that the company pretty consistently has been about the consumer experience and privacy. And it is just kind of fascinating that Tim Cook at some point apparently decided, like, this is bad for people and I'm not having it anymore. And then just got not very nice about it. I did tweet, though, about the fact that about there are two parts of this that I found fascinating. There was a he said, you know, the companies, the two have like taken some jabs at each other. For example, Facebook and some other companies paid for a disinformation campaign about Apple and Tim Cook maybe running for president to try to sour his relationship with Donald Trump. And then Tim Cook on CNBC said, I wouldn't do my business like they did. And I just would like to point out that those things are not equivalent. Paying for a disinformation campaign is a fascinating business story, which we have long promised to dig into because there are all these digital marketing firms that just exist to do that. And those are not the same.
Not the same.
Not the same.
For sure. For sure.
Really good story, though.
Yes.
Like, clearly I read every word so carefully that I screenshotted it and highlighted parts of it. Yes. It was really interesting. I also, I want to go back to the AstraZeneca thing quickly. I'm not going to take up our whole time. But you also notice that basically the guy who's in charge of, or a guy who is in charge of logistics, vaccine logistics for the government, got on Twitter talking about the Defense Production Act? Like, I want to explain, there have been a lot of questions about the Defense Production Act and how it works in relation to the vaccines and like why we can't send things and can send things. And I think it is interesting the degree to which Biden administration officials seem to be engaging on Twitter. That's interesting all by itself.
Ron Klain specifically, chief of staff,
Yep, totally. And then I'll try to find, it was like somewhere in the, it's lost in my replies now, but I will try to find them. That was, but I'm trying to figure out how to frame this. It seems good that the Biden administration is susceptible to criticism. Like, they clearly felt that they needed to respond to these concerns around the Defense Production Act and also to get out some of the raw supplies, raw materials that India had asked for, and then now release some of these vaccine doses. So why weren't they just doing that? Did no one tell them?
What took them so long is the short version of what you're trying to say, right?
Well, no, I think what I'm trying to say is, like, I want to believe that the reasoning was on firmer footing than no one yelled at us about it.
Oh, I don't think you should believe that. I think you should believe that nobody yelled at us is the reason.
I know. And that bugs me.
Yeah.
Not going to lie.
Well, that's fair.
Yep.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Yeah. Okay. I have two things. One, this is a departure for me, I will say. I am bringing a conversation starter because we have had a lot of conversations off and on about cryptocurrency and its effect on climate. We know that it uses a ton of electricity, a ton of global energy. There are lots of conversations about how, it's also, you know, trapping off the flares, the methane flares from oil fields and using that for energy. But as I was, there was a pretty incredible thread that popped up by this woman, Alexandra Aaron, who's an author, who basically was like, actually, I think we need to ban cryptocurrency. Like, it is, the gist of the thread is essentially, there couldn't be a more platonic instantiation of capitalism than cryptocurrency, right? It's a thing that was created to either be money or make people money. Right now, it just exists to make people money and use energy from fossil fuels. And so there's like, it's just like a loop of death. Create a thing that is nothing but a big old asset class, right? Making and selling this asset.
For sure. For sure.
And then in doing so, the more you make, the more destructive it gets. And I just I raise this because I think we actually really need to have a very serious conversation about that.
Yeah, I'm
and
with that.
It was a really thought-provoking tweet. Yeah.
Yep.
It was really interesting. And then what got her set off was a guy who tweeted that semiconductor shortages may be being caused in part because companies are being custom building chips for crypto miners. Exactly.
Yes.
So I did a little reporting on this because I don't want to just start a conversation, you know, and not have some info. And I asked my guy who's like the semiconductor expert, and he said, I don't think it's fair to say that this is a big enough market that it is truly commanding a significant shift away from other hardware. However, there is demand for crypto-specific hardware, and companies are indeed building and developing crypto-specific hardware that is siphoning some small amount of resource away from specifically GPUs, the graphic processing units, which are the ones that are kind of more like visually intensive. And so there are, in fact, mining chips. So in the moment that we are having a semiconductor shortage, if even some small percent is being siphoned off for mining specific chips, which again only creates like an imaginary currency that people are getting super rich off of. And then therefore that consumes tons and tons and tons of energy and more every year, so much so that like Mongolia just banned it. We should probably have a more serious conversation about that.
Yeah. I think that's a great follow-up to our Bitcoin crypto conversation that we had a couple of weeks ago. For sure.
Yep. Yep. Totally. Okay. Do you want the quick Apple podcast rant? Should I just go super fast? Because I promised this on Friday.
Well,
and here we
are.
Yeah,
I know we did. Should we do it like Thursday? Okay. I mean, if you can do it, because we're ticking down the time here, and I know I took 30.
Basically, look, I've been podcasting since 2005. 2005. Don't you listen to other these tech people who are like, I was so early in podcasting. We invented it, okay? We invented the first commercially successful podcast in 2005, and ever since then, that entire time, Apple has essentially been owning and controlling the distribution of this product, but also kind of sitting on it and making sure it didn't go very far. And for years, almost two full decades, they promised that they were almost a decade and a half, they promised like, oh, we will create metrics, and that will enable you to make more money in podcasting, for example, because what advertisers really want in digital products is metrics, but they didn't exist. So like in 2017, Apple finally came along and said, like, maybe we'll make some metrics. Maybe we'll like enable some technology for dynamic ad insertion so that podcasts could make money. And in the meantime, since they never actually did any of that, all of these cottage industries sprung up to support podcasts and creators like Patreon or Acast, which does dynamic ad insertion. And now all of a sudden here comes Apple in the year of our Lord 2021 and is like, these things seem like they have the potential to make money, even though we, the primary distribution platform, have kept them from doing so for nigh on 15 years now. We should take 30%. And that's my rant.
Yes. Okay.
The end.
The end.
Next.
No kidding.
Should we smile?
All right.
I mean
smile.
It. That's it. That's all I got.
All right.
Okay. What you got? Oh, my God.
I'll go first real quick.
Ahead. Yeah, you will.
Yes. So, couple of things. Number one. I'll spare you the whole backstory because we don't have a lot of time. But somebody found in Apple's Plus TV's preview of Ted Lasso season 2 this past weekend, somebody found the recipe for Ted Lasso shorthand that he puts in the box and gives to Rebecca every morning. And it's awesome. It's also got a lot of butter in it. Tony's going to put it on the show page. But the recipe is out there. I appreciate you.
Oh my God.
Isn't that great?
I'm making this tonight. It appears to be that the recipe is only butter. So I'm pretty excited about that. It should be pretty easy to bake. Just butter. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yum. Yeah. Oh, that's so wonderful.
Good stuff.
Quickly, I just spent too much time on Twitter today, and it both bummed me out but also delivered me this. So totally worth it. Evidently, there's been a thing happening in Asia, in China, where this young Russian man joined a Chinese boy band show by accident and then was like, oh no, I've made a terrible mistake. I don't want to be on this show because the winner has to join a Chinese boy band. And he was like, I really don't want to do that. He joined as a Chinese teacher and then signed on as a contestant because he's really handsome. And then basically spent weeks begging to be voted off. And the viewers were like, oh no. This guy is hilarious. He is our anti-hero. He said on one episode, I'm not even making this up, don't love me. You'll get no results. but probably not like that. He probably said it in Chinese. And no, they just wouldn't like do that. It.
Don't love me. Oh, my God.
You'll get no results. They voted him all the way through, like for 3 months. They voted him all the way through because they were just like, we love him. He's the most miserable wage slave, they called him.
Oh, my God.
And you got to go watch his videos of him just like half-heartedly dancing and rapping his way through this contest. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. That's it for today. It's only 15 minutes on the nose.
I know.
Boom.
I know.
We did it. Kai will be out tomorrow. Marketplace's Mariel Segura and I will be here for a deep dive on data privacy. What happened to privacy during the pandemic is not good. The risks that remain as we come out of it, they are many. For now, send your questions and your comments. To make me
smart. Like, I don't even need to be here. You just do both sides of the conversation. Oh, man. Oh, my goodness.
A lot of people in here. A lot of people living in this.
Liana Squilacci just getting us out of here. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner does production stuff for us. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters, also on Make Me Smart Explainers. Do I have any this week? I don't even know. I didn't get a Slack the other day. Did I?
Don't know.
Oh, well. Anyway.
You'll find out. Erica Phillips is typing. You're about to find out right now. I got so distracted. I forgot to read the credits.
Here it is. I'm waiting.
I know. This is real time feedback. Today's program was engineered by Liana Squilacci. As you heard, that's why it was so tight. Ben Tolliday, Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. The senior producer is Donna Tam. She hates us. And the executive director of On Demand is Satara Nieves.
And I shall be receiving a Slack later today with details on those things that I have to do for Erica. So that's good. We're all set. Boom. Look at that.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.